This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven.
All you godless infidels, out-of-the-closet atheists, and happy heathens, and a warm welcome to everyone listening to our weekly broadcast devoted to the secular point of view, your antidote to the domination of our public airwaves by the religious right. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist, a former clergy who has seen the light. Coming up later in the program, we'll be talking with Christopher Hitchens, the author of the bestseller, God is Not Great.
And we'll also be talking with a genuine atheist in a foxhole, Jeremy Hall, who is in the military stationed in Iraq and is suing the Pentagon for its blatant discrimination against non-Christians.
If this is the first time you've caught Free Thought Radio, you should know that this is the non-faith-based initiative of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is the largest association of atheists and agnostics in the entire country, and we're a state church watchdog group.
And in fact, last week, the Freedom From Religion Foundation just won a court victory in Indiana. We got the state to abolish an unconstitutional chaplaincy that was set up to bring faith into the workplace of State Department workers.
Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. Annie Laurie, you are an original co-founder of the association.
That's right. I'm a lifelong freethinker. I was raised without religion. In fact, I'm a third-generation freethinker.
What does freethinker mean? Tell our listeners.
Freethinker is somebody who forms their opinion about religion based on reason rather than on faith, tradition, or authority. Whereas, Dan, you were raised very differently.
Well, I just got back from Ireland. I was over there doing a debate, and the first question the Irish freethinkers asked me when I got there, they said, "We know you're an atheist, but are you a Catholic atheist or are you a Protestant atheist?" It was really important for them to know, and of course, I was raised Protestant. I was a Protestant minister. I preached the gospel for 19 years. I was a true believer. I really thought Jesus was coming again. I wanted to save souls, and I guess I did. I saved him from something. But I wrote a book about it. I went through a painful process of reevaluation. At the end, I dumped out all the bathwater. I found out there's no baby there, and now I am a happy atheist.
And we met to do an Oprah Winfrey show on Christians who deconvert and lose their faith. That was back in 1984.
That's when you and I met, and I met your mom, and we have a videotape of that, and the rest is history.
And you can read more about Dan's deconversion story in his book, Losing Faith from Preacher to Atheist.
Free Thought Radio is the first national radio show catering to the views of America's fastest growing segment of the U.S. population when you break it down by religious identification, or in this case, non-religious identification. And that is, the fastest growing group is non-religious, non-theists, atheists, agnostics, skeptics, infidels, whatever you want to call us, we all disbelieve in the same God.
And the non-religious are 14% of the U.S. population, the adult population. Yet you can turn on your TV or radio 24/7 and be preached at, and increasingly being told who to vote for in the name of God or Jesus.
Have you ever been driving down the highway and seen those, what do they call them, the God billboards? You know, those black and white with these messages? Well, it is our turn to fight back. Just this week, we put up the very first non-theistic, non-God billboard here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Dan, why don't you say what it says?
Well, the one we put up just earlier this week says, "Beware of dogma." And it looks like a stained glass window, and it has the name of our foundation with a webpage at the bottom of it.
So we don't go to Mass, but we think we can go to the Masses.
That was my line.
And, of course, America, what we're trying to say is that America was founded as a secular nation on secular principles.
And, you know, you hear the claim that America is a Christian nation, but if it is, where does it say that? It doesn't say that in the Constitution. It doesn't say that in the Declaration. In fact, there are documents that explicitly say America is not a Christian nation.
Well, in that document is the Constitution. It is a godless document, and the only references to religion in it are exclusionary, such as there shall be no religious test for public office. There is no God. There's no Christianity. There's no Ten Commandments.
What about so help me God in the oath for the president?
The oath for the president is given in the Constitution. It is secular. There's no reference to so help me God. There's no Bible.
Somehow I knew
that. It is a godless document.
But in spite of the fact that we have very proudly the first secular constitution in the world, godless constitution, there is still a concerted attempt by the religious right to promote this really pernicious myth that America is a Christian nation. In fact, on last week's Free Thought radio show, we talked about the new poll that was released in September by a group called the First Amendment Center. That was the anniversary of the adoption of the secular U.S. Constitution.
It was released on September 17th.
September 17th. And in this poll, a shocking 65% of Americans said that the founders intended the United States to be a Christian nation.
65%. That's overwhelming.
65%. And 55% of those polled believe that the Constitution establishes a Christian nation.
So that means a majority of Americans might be prepared to vote in a theocracy, and that is scary. And last week, presidential candidate John McCain was, in fact, asked about this poll.
I would probably have to say yes, that the Constitution established the United States of America as a Christian nation. But I say that, again, in the broadest sense. The lady that holds her lamp beside the golden door doesn't say, I only welcome Christians, okay? We welcome the poor, the tired, the huddled masses. But when they come here, they know that they are in a nation founded on Christian principles.
How can somebody running for public office think that our Constitution establishes this country as a Christian nation? Hold the Constitution and read it. Where does it say that? Where is the document that says we are a Christian nation?
And, you know, this reminds me of, there's been a comparison. If it's calling America a Christian nation, you can say that a majority of people identify in some way, it's about 70%, 75%, as nominally Christian, but that's their private beliefs. But calling us a Christian nation implies that our government is a theocracy and that Christianity is the winning religion in our country. And that would be like, say you got on a bus in San Francisco and a majority of the people on that bus happened to be Asian Americans. That would be like calling that bus an Asian American bus instead of a city bus.
Well, it is true that a majority of Americans are white. Does that make us a white nation?
It's exactly the same terrible myth.
A majority are female. So America is a female nation, right? We are a nation that is neutral on religious grounds. We are a one nation under a constitution, not under a religion.
So the religion has, the government has no religion. Our individual Americans can be as religious or non-religious as they like, but government has no business taking a position on religion. Free Thought Radio, of course, is nonpartisan, apolitical, but we will be documenting through the next year problems with any positions by presidential candidates on this all-important topic of keeping state and church separate.
Presidential candidates of all parties and non-parties. And keeping track as well of the overt attempts of the Christian far right to swing the elections in their favor. And in the coming weeks, a regular segment of Free Thought Radio will be Theocracy Alert. And we want to mention that coming up this week on October 9th, we mark the birth date of John Lennon. He would have turned 67 on October the 9th. As you probably noticed, our opening theme music for today's show, of course, is John Lennon's Imagine. Toward the end of his very short life, John Lennon announced in his song, God, that he believed in nothing, nothing religious, no Bible, no Jesus. He ended the song saying, I just believe in me. So we claim him as a freethinker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Free Thought Radio will be right back to talk with an honest-to-goodness atheist in a foxhole by the name of Jeremy Hall. And yes, there are atheists in foxholes. We'll also be talking with the provocative Christopher Hitchens, author of God Is Not Great.
We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, or the wall will come a-tumbling down.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Dan Barker here in the studio with co-host Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Last week, we announced the lawsuit by the Military Religious Freedom Foundation alleging a pattern of practices that discriminate against non-Christians in the military. The lawsuit is taken with plaintiffs, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and Jeremy Hall, a soldier assigned to Fort Riley's 97th Military Police Battalion. And Jeremy is that proverbial atheist in a foxhole that really does exist. We thought we were going to get him on the phone, but clearance didn't come through. So the head, the executive director of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Mikey Weinstein, has kindly substituted for him. Welcome back to the show, Mikey.
Pleasure to be back, you guys. Thanks.
So tell us quickly what's going on with this lawsuit.
Certainly. On Constitution Day, which was September 17th, we thought was an apropos day, our Military Religious Freedom Foundation filed suit with our co-plaintiff, a very, very brave and courageous young soldier, specialist for Jeremy Hall, who currently is stationed in Combat Operations Base Spiker in Iraq. We filed a federal lawsuit in the Federal District Court in Kansas City, Kansas, against Secretary of Defense Robert Gates and Major Freddie J. Wellborn. And so the foundation, we are co-plaintiffs with our client, Specialist Jeremy Hall, and it's our lawyers based in Topeka that are representing the case. And this will be the first, we hope, of a number of cases that will come against the Pentagon in an attempt to prevent it from further falling, though it's fallen most of the way now to the far, you know, evangelical fundamentalist Christian right.
We hope to talk to Jeremy on a future show, but tell us exactly what Jeremy's discrimination, what he's alleging, he's faced.
On July 31st, there have been a number of incidences, and if anyone wants to see the actual filings of the lawsuit, I advise them to go to our website, which is www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org, and you can read the filings for yourself. As an atheist or a free thinker, he's gone through a number of terrible situations in the Army. The worst culminated on July 31st this year, when Jeremy, after receiving prior clearance through the chaplain, so I'm not sure he even needed to do that, to hold a free thinkers meeting at the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation building at this this combat operations base, he started into the meeting. There were several other folks that were there, and an Army major who ostensibly was interested turned out to be a ringer. Major Freddie J. Wellborn allegedly started yelling at our client and some of the others who were there, threatening them with Uniform Code of Military Justice action for being atheists, threatening that they would not be allowed to reenlist, raising his voice and screaming and causing the other folks that were there to run off and leave, and used his position of superior military rank and authority to disrupt, destroy, and basically tear asunder this meeting that was certainly constitutionally protected under our Constitution.
Now, Jeremy had been in communication both with you and us since last spring, saying
right.
that there's religious tracts everywhere, like in the mess hall, and religion being promoted by other soldiers. And so he wanted to hand out the Freedom From Religion Foundation's secular non-tracts, we call them, and wanted to have this meeting. So right now, they've never really had their meeting. Is that how it stands?
They tried to have it, but of course it was massively disrupted by this this apparently fundamentalist, dominionist Christian by the name of Major Freddie J. Wellborn. It's very, very hard to speak truth to power for the average American. I always tell people, I think I've mentioned to you guys before, the average American doesn't have enough intestinal fortitude generally to tell someone to stop speaking in a crowded theater, in a movie theater, let alone if you're a person, you know, if you're outranked and you're a junior enlisted person or officer, when a superior officer or enlisted person, using this draconian specter of command influence is trying to stop you from doing something, it's very hard to do, which is why this is, you know, this is the true measure of courage. And
it certainly is. Now, I don't know what you're allowed to say, but my understanding is there's some protection around Jeremy Hall. They're talking about
24 hours after we filed the lawsuit, Jeremy started getting threats about his physical well-being, and some of our sources on the internet told us that they saw there were threads talking about fragging him. If you're familiar with the term fragging,
yeah.
It means, it comes from the term throwing in a fragmentation grenade into someone's tent while they're sleeping and killing them. We turned this over to the Pentagon authorities. We, our foundation, have not been able to confirm anything regarding the fragging, although we know there were some strands out there. There was talk of this. Jeremy received threats in front of a number of other soldiers by people of superior rank, equal rank, et cetera, about what he had done. He was called names. Our foundation has some very, very powerful contacts in the Pentagon. We made it clear immediately that if a hair on the head of Jeremy was touched, literally there would be hell to pay. So now
we'll be watching this. We're out of time here, Mike.
Okay. Well, we thank you so much for coming on the show at very fast notice to substitute and for advocating for Jeremy Hall, who's a very brave atheist in a foxhole. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with co-host Dan Barker. We've been talking with Mikey Weinstein of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back after this break to talk with best-selling author Christopher Hitchens.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And we're back. I'm Dan Barker with co-host Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be speaking with the best-selling author, the famous Bible Belter, as Richard Dawkins called him, Christopher Hitchens, author of the book God Is Not Great.
Christopher Hitchens is contributing editor to Vanity Fair. He's author of many books, including a book on Mother Teresa, The Missionary Position, and of course, the author of the best-selling God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything.
Christopher, I read your book as soon as it came out, and I have to say that God Is Not Great is great.
Well, that's very generous of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for writing it.
Well, it was actually a pleasure, I have to say.
Now, you have been on the road ever since this book came out, haven't you?
Yes, I have, and I asked my publishers from the get-go to send me not on the conventional book tour, which is usually New York, Washington, Chicago, Seattle, L.A., San Francisco, that kind of thing, but to put us through the Mason-Dixon line and down into the South and to ask for a debate partner from the other side at every stop. And that was, believe me, fun.
Wow, so you're preaching where they need to hear the sermons.
Well, yes, and I'm also preaching in an area where people resent it being assumed that they are all people of faith. A very common experience I've found in places like Atlanta and Raleigh and where else did I go? All over the South, in Texas too, was that people came along thinking that they'd better come to hear me because otherwise I'd be the only atheist in the room. And found out that there was more company. Little Rock was another case. More company than they thought.
There's a lot more of us than you'd think.
Oh, very much so. And even among the faithful, this is what was proved by those who did, I must say very generously and usually very courteously, agree to debate with me, was that they're not very sure of themselves either, not as sure as they make out.
Well, you probably know the Bible better than they do.
I know it better than some of them do. I think I could claim that, but not as well as all. But I mean, to know it is, in most cases, to doubt that all or any of it can be taken literally. And this doubt is actually quite widespread. And after all, I didn't expect that by the end of the tour we would have a book from Mother Teresa saying she couldn't believe a word of it.
Isn't that something? The patron saint of atheism now.
Yeah, well, it means it's in very high places, so to say, that people cannot, in fact, force themselves for long to believe things that are, in the first place, self-evidently untrue, I would argue, but in the second and more disturbing case, are, in fact, immoral beliefs. Beliefs like vicarious redemption, that someone else can die for your sins and relieve you not just of your sins, but of your responsibility. That's obviously not moral preaching.
You have a whole chapter on that, religion as an original sin.
Well, I think that's in a sense what it is. It is an attempt to evade responsibility and to readopt the ancient practice of scapegoating, of quite literally taking a goat, hurling all the sins of the tribe on it, and then driving it into the desert, presuming it's taking the sins with them. We laugh when we hear that people used to do that, but we are supposed to be respectful when we see someone has a bumper sticker saying, "Christ died for my sins."
I like that line in your book, how much effort it takes to affirm the incredible.
Yes, there's a famous expression of Kierkegaard's, which is called the leap of faith. Why people respect this as much as they do, I don't honestly know. In other words, a leap away from reason, from the only faculty you have that distinguishes you from the other primates. But okay, I can see why some people esteem it. The problem is you can't make that leap just once and say, fine, I've cleared the gap, I'm on the other side now, I'm on the faith side. You have to keep making the leap and forcing yourself to keep saying you believe it. That's why people need churches. They have to keep getting together to chant it in company regularly.
To brainwash themselves.
If they were left to their own devices, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, because you don't see scientists getting together every Sunday morning holding hands and singing, "Gravity is real, yes, gravity is real, I believe in my heart."
No, you don't. And every single physicist, however say, or physician, however sure they are of their own innovations in the field, openly goes to his peers or her peers and says, if you can prove me wrong, I'll be really grateful because you'll have moved the whole ball down the field.
Now, we've got 3 minutes before our break. You were raised nominally religious. I mean, you were at least indoctrinated in your school in England.
Religious indoctrination is compulsory in the land of my birth. It's a legal obligation that the schools have to teach the Christian religion, and they also have to teach it as true.
Which is terrible. So how did you...
Yeah, but it leads to... But don't get too depressed. It also leads to the mass production of atheism. I mean, if there was compulsory school prayer in the United States, I wouldn't get the blues, because that would probably have the same effect.
You call yourself a Protestant atheist in your book.
Yes, I do come from the Anglican and Protestant tradition of the break between England and Rome.
So how did you...
The Protestant Revolution, the Reformation, people like Thomas Paine, some of the radical Protestants of the Cromwellian Revolution, who are in fact the ancestors of the American Revolution, it's that tradition of Christianity with which I sometimes respectfully, not always, but disagree. The King James Bible, the Cranmer Prayer Book, the English Hymnal.
So those are what turned you into an atheist?
I'd rather say I was fortunate that that was my exposure to religious teaching, because I think it's much, in linguistic terms, to say, more beautiful.
Did you know that some of the hymns in the English hymnal were written by an atheist?
No, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Ralph Vaughan Williams was an atheist. And
I actually think that, don't let me forget his name on the air, how terrible. The man who wrote "Say Not the Struggle Nought Availeth," Arthur Hugh Clough, appears to have had a crisis of faith as well. Those are some of the most beautiful of the hymns.
So, did you ever really believe those things?
It wasn't that I didn't believe them or did believe them, or that I turned from them. It was that I discovered that I didn't have a moment on the road to Damascus. In other words, and I rather distrust people who do that in either direction. I just realized one day, I describe it in the book as quite a small boy, that I wasn't able to believe any of this stuff.
It ain't necessarily so.
And we're back. I'm Dan Barker. We're back with Free Thought Radio. That music you're listening to is Verdi's Dies Irae, The Wrath of God, from Verdi's Requiem. Giuseppe Verdi was born on October the 9th, same day as John Lennon, in the year 1813. Although he did write that religious requiem, he was a lifelong atheist. He was an altar boy who grew up to stay away from priests.
And now we're back with our guest, Christopher Hitchens.
Hello, Chris. You still
nice
there?
Nice to be back.
So we were talking about you were
nice to be back, and I did not know that about Verdi. That's very interesting.
Yes, and well, his wife said he didn't believe in God, but she didn't think he was an atheist. And of course, not believing in God makes you an atheist. But yes, there's a wonderful history of songwriters who have enriched the world who did not believe in a God, but they could write Greek myth, Roman myth, and they could write from the Bible, which is what Verdi did.
Yes. It's often argued against me and my co-thinkers when we're debating with the faithful, well, you know, has secularism ever created anything as wonderful as a cathedral or some of the devotional music and so forth? And I have various answers to this. One of these is that we don't know. And the Verdi point is very useful in this exact respect, because we don't know that Michelangelo, for example, was a believer. We do know that if he'd said he wasn't, he would not just not have got the job. He'd have probably had a long and exquisitely painful death. So we cannot be certain that it's a genuine testimony of faith. The second is that, you know, there are many great buildings. I've written a book myself about the Parthenon of expired religions that have to be, in my opinion, preserved and revered. I leave it to the people like the Taliban to blow up religious statues or the parties of God in Iraq to blow up each other's mosques. That kind of obscenity is reserved for the faithful.
Well, if a composer...
But you can revere... I think, actually, you could define one of our great cultural projects as how to preserve what has been left to us aesthetically by the religious centuries without having to subscribe, say, to the cult of Pallas Athena the goddess or to Athenian imperialism.
If a composer wanted to eat back in those days, they had to write for the king or for the church. You know,
that's pretty much true. Yeah.
Who was paying them to write their music?
By the way, just to be fair, I mean, I think that people like John Donne and George Herbert, who I greatly admire, writers of devotional poetry, it must be a little... They weren't working for patrons. And it also must be a lot harder to fake, if you like, a devotional poem, which you have to really write yourself, than if you're a painter, just turn your hand to doing the nativity or the crucifixion, which you could do whether you believe in it or not, as Goya seems to have done in his paintings of the Spanish monarchy. Many people read those paintings of the Bourbons, as satirical, secretly satirical.
In your book, you have a chapter called Religion Kills, and you've traveled the whole world observing and documenting the violence and the divisiveness. And you say, religion poisons everything, as well as a menace to civilization, it has become a threat to human survival.
Yes, well, I think we're very nearly to the point with Iran, and we're not perhaps as far as we'd like to be from the point with Al-Qaeda or kindred organizations, where the thing we've long feared will happen, and that a messianic regime or group will get hold of an apocalyptic weapon. I mean, that's already happened in the case of Israel and Pakistan, though the Israeli regime is not exactly messianic, and it is under some kind of American and international control. It isn't nice to know that the people with that kidney have nuclear weapons, but with Pakistan, I think it's exceedingly dangerous, and with Iran would be intolerably so.
Well, some people would argue that a messianic government has control of nuclear arms here in the United States.
Yes, I'm familiar with that argument, but I've never met anyone who really thinks that it's true.
Well, there's an awful lot of proselytizing going on at the Pentagon, but...
I'll have to tell you in the time available that we've got that I do not believe that we live under a theocracy in this country.
No,
I'm very much opposed to, I mean, I've done more to oppose and ridicule the Christian right than most people have, and I think have made them squeal a few times, but I actually think that they are a very overrated group as well as a completely wicked and ridiculous one.
Well, I hope so.
Well, it's because of the eternal vigilance that we don't live under a theocracy.
Well, of course, needless to add, or no, not needless to add, you add quite correctly that one has to keep up the fire on these people. But, you know, I don't think the United States is a theocracy or wants to bring on the end of the world in a thermonuclear cataclysm. And I can't say that I know that or believe it of the Islamists.
You have a chapter on religion and health. Religion can be hazardous to your health. You talk about the violent, irrational, intolerant, horrible things, contemptuous of women and coercive toward children, and you say organized religion ought to have a great deal on its conscience.
Yes, it should. But, well, if you think, for example, of, I don't know, the campaigns against vaccination by religion, some of those still go on. Against blood transfusions by religion, some of those still go on. Against scientific and medical innovation in general.
Stem cell research.
So, yes, as being an interference with God's design. If you think that's just on the medical front, and then I don't have to draw you a picture about what we know about what the clergy have done to the children in their care for centuries, and how that is a sin. I use the word deliberately, that no decent unbeliever would consider committing or would be able to forgive themselves for thinking about. And it's the religious practice and theory of putting people in the care of elderly, repressed virgins with a text that says that everything sexual is filthy can possibly be anything but a fatally horrible idea.
Well, it's a put-down to humanity, human nature. We're all worms. We're all sinners. We're all damned. We can't think any good thoughts on our own. We have to submit to a dictator.
That's right, but cheer up, because the universe is designed with you in mind. So from being completely down on your face in the dust and groveling and being a masochist, you can get up and say, well, God has a big plan just for me. I mean, could one imagine anything that was worse for people's personalities than that?
Well, the arrogance of it, of course.
The arrogance combined with the false humility.
Well, I remember when I stopped
being a product of sin.
I felt that when I stopped being a minister, that suddenly I got more humble. I used to know everything, and suddenly I had to kind of sit down and go, whoa, I don't really know what I'm talking about here.
I had no idea you were a former minister. Well, good for you. You're in recovery.
I saw the light.
Excellent. Well done.
So, in your chapter on religion as an original sin, you say there are indeed several ways in which religion is not just amoral, but positively immoral.
Yes.
A false picture of reality to the world, the doctrine of blood sacrifice, and what a lot of people comment on is the imposition of impossible tasks and rules.
Yes, I think a great feature, this is true, by the way, of secular forms of totalitarianism as well, is that they promulgate laws that it's impossible to obey, and they're capricious. You never know whether you're following the law or not, and therefore you can always be arrested and always convicted. This is a very, very wicked way of treating people, and it does come from the religious idea that you can be sinning without knowing it, and you can be committing thought crime while you're asleep.
And isn't that awful? Now, what kind of reception have you been getting when you go around the country?
Well, to me, not completely surprisingly, very positive. I mean, I have to say, the Christianity Today, which is quite a fundamentalist group in some ways, invited me to debate with one of its champions on their own website, and they want to publish the results as a book. I almost everywhere I could find someone, some rabbi or priest, to come out and debate. In fact, I've had more invitations from them to do so than I can manage. And generally, the audiences have been very receptive and humorous and polite. So that's all been really pretty good. And then I think there are a lot of people who aren't in that community, obviously, who are fed up with being told in the media all the time that they belong to a country full of devout people, and have very kindly gone out and bought my book, partly to prove that that's not true.
But there have been some, of course, wonderful reviews, but there's been sort of snotty reviews, too. You know, they're lumping all of you best-selling atheist authors as shrill, that kind of stereotype.
I don't care about any of that.
Well,
I have a very thick skin and a broad back. And after all, I am being quite rude. some people consider to be very dear, cherished, and sacred beliefs. So,
well,
I can't very well complain if people complain.
You are speaking plainly on your disbelief, your dissent from religion. Is that being rude?
Well, I think if this is going to be allowed, that if people say, I mean, I once had someone actually take a swing at me at a dinner party in Washington because I said I thought that most of the Jesus story was legendary or mythical.
Well,
he said he just couldn't believe. I said, well, you know, you really must grow up about things like this, but I have to say that I think it's offensive, if we're going to be allowed to say things like offensive. well, to say that, well, the genitals of children should be mutilated in conformity with Bronze Age texts. I mean, I find that a little bit more than offensive, actually.
We're out of time here.
Well, thank you so much, Christopher Hitchens, for joining us. Thank you.
Ciao.
All of our past shows are available in an archive. They are also available for podcasting. You can go find them at ffrf.org. Send an email to us at freethoughtradio@ffrf.org.
We thank our guests, Christopher Hitchens and Mikey Weinstein, for pinch hitting for The Atheist in the Foxhole, Jeremy Hall. And we thank you for listening. Tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting.